welcome to episode 151 of the Bronx Beat Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus' BP Bronx blog. There's a lot of B's in that sentence. My name is EJ Fagan, and tonight I am joined by Derek Albin.
Hey, EJ, what's going on?
And Dr. Paul Semendinger.
Hello, Derek, and hello, EJ.
Hello, guys. So, how you feeling after getting swept by Tampa Bay?
I really don't. It doesn't bother me at all. I know that sounds crazy, but when your team is as good as the Yankees are this year, this kind of thing is just going to happen from time to time, and they kind of just play like crap at the Trop anyway, and it's a garbage stadium, so if you even can call it a stadium. I don't even know what I would call that place. A dump, I guess, is the right way to...
Circus tent.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, look, I feel like in past years, like a crappy series like that would really make me cranky, but... It didn't really faze me. It didn't ruin my weekend.
All right, so Derek has no anxiety from the last couple of years of the Yankees not being great. Paul, do you have anxiety?
I do. You know what? Derek is correct, and he is logical, and he is rational. And when the Yankees get swept by a team like the Tampa Bay Rays, the irrational side of me comes out, and the fan side of me comes out, and I start to think, well, Greg Bird doesn't hit, and Gary Sanchez doesn't hit, and now he's hurt. And, Domingo Germán didn't pitch well, and he's never going to pitch well again. And the Yankees, what they've done to this point is all a mirage, and they're not going to win any games the rest of the year, and they'll end up in last place. It's irrational, but that's what sometimes takes over when you get swept by the Tampa Bay Rays. So the fact that they won yesterday, and they're winning as we record this tonight, renews my faith.
Yeah, we're recording this, in the seventh inning, or bottom of the seventh inning. With Luis Severino on the mound, the Yankees are winning 6-0. So at the moment, it's feeling pretty good. And I'm kind of with Derek. I'm kind of okay with losing a couple of games here and there. It's going to happen. Even though I do have that division, the division standing is kind of haunting me at the moment, because it's going to be close between two powerhouse teams, as we've talked about before. But I want to move on to the bad news. Bad news is that Gary Sanchez has been injured. He has a groin injury. He injured them running to first. Injured his groin. It looked like running to first base on Sunday, I think it was. And will be out for at least 3 to 4 weeks. Though with groin injuries and catchers, I'm betting on the over a bit. Derek, what do you think about this injury? Is it how bad is this injury, and should the Yankees do something about it?
Yeah, I mean, this is the one thing that was upsetting about the weekend for me, at least. It's not good. He sounds like he's going to be out past the All-Star break, might not see him till August, and, there just aren't many good catchers at all in baseball, and the drop from Sanchez to Romine is pretty significant. So to go for a month or so, you're going to have to go playing Romine, and I know he's played well. It's going to be a drop-off, and that's even though that Sanchez, has not been quite himself either. It's not good, and there's not really much the Yankees can do. You can't really trade for anybody because there just aren't that many good catchers, and a stopgap acquisition is only going to last a month, and then there's Kyle Higashioka coming up as a backup, and he's really nothing special himself, so it's not a good situation all around.
Paul, if you're Brian Cashman, would you try to seek out a trade for an upgrade over Higashioka, or would you just kind of stand pat?
That's so hard. I think you have to stand pat. But here's my concern. We've seen this with so many injuries with the Yankees, where they say 4 to 5 weeks, and then it turns out to be 4 to 5 months. They seem to underreport injuries sometimes. And so, you know what? We have to, as fans, trust that Brian Cashman and the Yankee hierarchy actually know what they're doing, because they actually do a great job. They have to have a sense of how long this injury is going to be. If it's going to be 2 months or longer, I do think they need to get somebody better than Kyle Higashioka, because I don't think he's a viable backup. I don't think he's ever had a hit in the major leagues, 18 at-bats, I assume, something like that, I think. And I don't know if Austin Romine, as great as he's been this year, is really, truly a starter. And as bad as Gary Sanchez has been this year, in spite of his good home run numbers, it's a big, precipitous drop-off, and so that is concerning.
Yeah, I guess the good news is the Yankees have won 68% of their games, or 69% of their games, despite Gary Sanchez being bad. And so although you would expect Gary Sanchez to be better going forward, it looks like he's just been getting pretty unlucky. You know, you aren't taking a hit to the production that's already been there, right? I think you know, Austin Romine can probably be about as good as Gary Sanchez has been, but that's not a strong silver lining. And I don't think we have much more to say about it in this podcast other than get well soon, Gary. Hopefully, maybe this will you know snap him back into shape once he comes back from the injury. But again, groin injuries and catchers, though, that can be kind of nasty. I want to move on to the main story of tonight. And that main story is Aaron Judge. So I published an article today on BP Bronx. The title of the article pretty much says it all. The title is, "How much is Aaron Judge hurt by his biased strike zone?" Spoiler, a ton, and it's an outrage. So we've all read stories this season about Aaron Judge getting extra called strikes but down by the knees, that he is more likely than most other batters for umpires to call those strikes because he is tall, and so they have trouble visualizing the strike zone down low. Essentially, what they are doing is they are calling the same strike zone as they do for a normal size player for Aaron Judge, but because Aaron Judge is taller, his knees, in fact, it's not actually true, they're calling a worse strike zone than for Aaron Judge. So they're calling a larger strike zone, despite the fact that Aaron Judge's low point, the point at which you should call a strike and a ball, is actually higher than the average major league player because he's taller, right? He's got a huge strike zone, but they're not making that adjustment. In fact, maybe adjusting the wrong way. So you just put some numbers on top of this. Aaron Judge saw 1,449 pitches in the lowest part of the zone. This is where pitchers pitch him. He clearly has some kind of weakness low in the zone. They throw everything low. And 7.9% of the pitches that were low in the zone, so this is the very lowest part of the zone and out of the zone, according to StatCast's distribution of the zone, were called a strike. So about 8%. The average major league hitter sees about 3% of these pitches called as strikes. So Aaron Judge gets a lot more strikes called in this zone than others. And if you were to extrapolate that, you would find that Aaron Judge has probably seen about 72 more additional called strikes that would have been balls than the average major league pitcher. So what does this mean? There's a lot of people just kind of stop there. In fact, every article I've read has just kind of stopped there and said, damn, it really sucks that Aaron Judge is getting a lot of extra called strikes against him. This number is higher. The rate is much higher, in fact, than last year. Last year, he was among the league leaders, but was not the clear league leader that he is now. So the strike zone is getting worse against Aaron Judge. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to calculate what the effect was. So how big of an impact does this larger strike zone have on Aaron Judge's wOBA? So here's what I did to do that, and you can read the whole article for the real math. But basically, when you can compare two different counts, the count that that the judge would have if the ball was called a ball, and the count if it was called a strike. So on the first pitch of the at bat, it's 0-0. You can call a ball a strike or call a ball a ball. If it's a strike, Aaron Judge has a 293 wOBA against. The strike, you know, the count is so important that just that one strike called at the beginning of an at bat turns Aaron Judge into Ronald Torres. If it's called a ball, that first pitch, Aaron Judge is a 516 wOBA, which is like peak Barry Bonds. In fact, better than peak Barry Bonds. The difference between this just one strike in that situation is a gap of about 200 wOBA, right? 0.2 wOBA, which is huge, right? That's like I said, the difference between Ronald Torres and peak Barry Bonds. And you can do this for every single count, every kind of count. So you could either be a 3-1 count, or you could be a 2-2, or you could be a 2-2 count. You could either be a 1-2 count, or you could be a 2-1 count. And you compare the differences in Judge's splits, his actual performance in those counts, for each of those. And I did that, and then I multiplied that number by some stuff, and I got a number that I did not believe at first. In fact, I spent a whole day checking these numbers to make sure this was correct. That if you adjust for those called strikes, Aaron Judge gains 0.05 wOBA. So he goes from a 403 wOBA hitter to a 453 wOBA hitter, which is a massive, massive difference. It's the difference between Aaron Judge and Mike Trout. On the low end, it's the difference between Aaron Judge, current all-star Aaron Judge, and like Ben Zobrist at his peak. Like the difference of a 0.05 wOBA is catastrophic. And it seems the evidence is pretty clear that there's a huge impact on Aaron Judge. Maybe it's not 0.05 WOBA, but maybe it's half that. Even if it is half that, it is an outrageous thing for umpires to be doing to Aaron Judge, and it needs to be corrected. Paul, I'll let you go first. What is your reaction to this post?
All right, so EJ, I first have to say that everybody listening, we all have to rise for EJ. We're not rising for Aaron Judge. We're all rising for EJ. I have been watching this dynamic for the last year and a half, since Aaron Judge came up and started to become an impact player. And with whoever's watching the game with me, friends or my family, I have said to myself, this is unbelievable. This is ridiculous. I don't understand why he keeps getting these bad calls. I wish that I had the mental capacity, the time, and the resources that I could figure out how badly this is impacting Aaron Judge and really the Yankees and in a sense all of baseball, because it's changing the dynamic of Aaron Judge, which changes the dynamic of the Yankees, which changes the dynamic of the games. And then you said today that you were writing it, and the work you did is just amazing. And I do have to also say that I like the fact that you put all your resources into the article, and you asked other readers to read your work and to provide feedback and to analyze it and to find out where, if you made a mistake, there was one. And I also think that you admit in your research that you think your research is not as that the impact is greater. And I have to agree with that, because if I'm Aaron Judge and a ball one is called strike one because it's a pitch low in the zone that I can't hit, and all of a sudden I realize that they're going to call that pitch a strike, I know two things. One, the pitcher's going to come back down there. And two, if I don't swing, it's going to be a strike anyway, so I'm going to have to swing. And what they do is they take him out of his at-bat and his chance to truly impact a situation, not because the pitcher's doing his job, but because the umpire's not doing his. And in any other business, if with this kind of evidence, and again, you mentioned it. Everybody mentions it. It's in papers. It's on blogs. It's on telecasts. It's on Yankee telecasts. It's on ESPN. Look how many strikes they're calling out of the zone on Aaron Judge. But nobody goes further than that. In any other business where there's this egregious fact that people are calling things incorrectly, something would happen. And it's not in baseball. They just let this continue. And they say, what a shame. Poor Aaron Judge. But the umpires need to adapt. It's their job to adapt. And something's got to be done. So that's why we blogged it on our blog, and I put it all over Twitter as best as I could, because I think something like this, your research needs to get to the Yankees, and it needs to get to Major League Baseball, and it needs to get to somebody who's going to tell the umpires they have to call the real strike zone.
Just to give you an answer to one of your questions there, I didn't put this in the post, but it's about a 2-win difference for the Yankees. So the Yankees would gain on average about 2 wins if Judge had a fair strike zone. According to these results.
Okay, so they have a half game lead right now, correct?
Yeah, so it'll be all a 2.5 game lead.
And that's
could decide the division. Yeah, yes. Especially it's only half a season, right? So this could be a 4-win difference, 4 wins.
And that's going to be the difference this year between the team that finishes in first and the team that has to play that silly wild card game.
Right, and even from a business perspective, millions of dollars are at stake here. I mean, this is huge. I mean, this is the effect size is massive. And I have a theory about the Yankees, because I suspect the Yankees didn't take me that long to run these numbers. The Yankees have a lot of statistics PhDs in their analytics department. But I have a theory about that we can talk about later. But first, Derek, can I get your reaction to this?
I think Derek left.
And Derek is back. Derek, you are back, and that is perfect timing. Derek, can I get your reaction to this post?
What happened there? I don't know what happened. But anyway, I heard most of your points. I don't know. Man, that kind of threw me for a loop. Sorry, guys. Whenever I watch Judge at bat, and I see a low strike, and he just takes it and doesn't really, you know, say much. I know it's not in his nature, I guess, to bark back to the umpires, but there's got to be a little bit of pushing, I think, from his end, because it's getting to the point where clearly, as you demonstrated, that It's just not fair at all.
I wonder why the Yankees aren't making a big deal out of this, and I have a theory. I'm like, know what you guys think about this theory. So the Yankees have to know that this is a big deal on the order of what the numbers say, right? They have better people running the numbers than I am, than me. They are, you know, they know that this is an issue. I don't think the Yankees can go out there and make a big deal of this because I think umpires retaliate. That if Aaron Judge or the Yankees go out and say, I'm getting hosed by the umpires, fix this, please. The umpires will, they don't like their territory being infringed upon, and they're not doing this intentionally, right? They're doing this essentially by accident. And here's the other interesting thing. So the zone is actually more accurate for Aaron Judge than for other players. So I forget exactly how the rule book describes the strike zone at the knee, but it's like, you know, the midpoint of the hollow of the knee is the end of the strike zone. However, in practice, major league batters are given a much higher strike zone than that. And so anything from like the middle of the end of the knee to like a little bit up on the thigh is kind of in this territory where some things get called a ball, some things get called a strike. For Aaron Judge, there's a much higher likelihood that they'll be called a strike. In fact, twice the likelihood that one of those balls will be called a strike. Then even someone, I think Fangraphs did a poster, they found that he was twice as likely to see those balls called a strike as Giancarlo Stanton, right? So a big difference right there. But at the same time, so if I looked at like a Questech readout, like Aaron Judge's would look a little more accurate than, would look like very accurate. Like they're really good at calling Aaron Judge balls. But in practice, what that means is that's just a bias against Aaron Judge. It means that a bunch of other batters get balls that should be called as strikes, but Aaron Judge gets strikes that should be called as strikes. And that's the problem, right? Like you can randomly distribute errors, but you can't correlate errors. When you correlate errors, you have a disadvantage added to one team. So I don't know, but do you think that the Yankees could get out there, Paul, and just, you know, complain to Major League Baseball or the umpires publicly?
All right. So yes, I think they have to do something. Back in the day when I was growing up and George Steinbrenner was the owner, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but when there were bad calls, he used to make videotapes of them and send them to the league office and prove how the umpires were doing a bad job against the Yankees. Now, I don't know if they want to do that, but I do think it's the team's responsibility to point out this obvious bias or this obvious error that everybody can see with their eyes, and it's quite apparent. And whether or not that means Aaron Judge, who it's out of his character, has to turn around and start barking at umpires, or whether Aaron Boone has to start saying stuff, but somehow somebody has to say, like, it's just patently unfair, and it's ruining the competitive balance. You can't call a different strike zone or an unfair strike zone based on one player just because he's big. It just doesn't make any sense.
Derek, what should the Yankees do here?
Yeah, I don't know. There's not really, you know, they don't want to get fined. You know, I'm sure Boone and Cashman and the like don't want to get fined by complaining publicly, but, you know, there's got to be something that has to be done to correct this, obviously, because you're right. I mean, you're seeing balls that are getting called, but like just slightly below his knee, that are getting called for strikes consistently, and it's, yeah, Judge is so good that he's still producing at an incredible level, but there's room for growth, which is kind of incredible to think about, and just to leave it on the table and not try to do something about it would be just negligent.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think that I think that if Aaron Judge were having like Bryce Harper's season right now, that this would be like a travesty and there would be a massive outrage and all of that. But Aaron Judge is having a really good season. He's like top 10 in WAR. He's having a legitimate all-star slugger season, but he could be so much better. And I think my answer to this question is, I think it's Major League Baseball's job to fix this, not the Yankees. I'm not actually worried about getting fined or something like that. I think that the umpires will retaliate and call worse calls against the Yankees if they go out there and make a big public stink about this. Maybe they're making a stink behind closed doors, but it's obviously not working. Again, the strike zone has gotten worse for Aaron Judge since last year. Much worse, like 40% worse. And so, you know, at some point, you know, Major League Baseball's interest has an interest in the best slugger in a major media market on a team that is not ignored by that major media market. having like have being the best slugger. Like he Aaron Judge is might be as good as Mike Trout or Mookie Betts this season, but he is only, you know, about half as good as Mike Trout because he has been handicapped by the umpires. Okay, we're back. We had a little bit of technical difficulty, so we're just going to end the previous segment, move on to the next segment. We are going to talk about openers. So the Yankees were treated, I guess, to a pretty dominant Rays bullpen that were utilizing the opener strategy against the Yankees, and they've been utilizing it for about a month now due to basically running out of starting pitching. And it's an interesting strategy, and the Yankees have some starting pitching issues, especially with some starters who can't really seem to go deep into games. So I want to ask you guys, first of all, I'm going to ask you eventually, should the Yankees use an opener? But I don't know, Derek, can you kind of give a quick summary of the logic behind the opener?
Yeah, sure. So what we've seen the Rays do is essentially start someone like, say, Sergio Romo, and the idea is to use one of your better relievers, although I guess Romo is really not that good. But the point is that there's some benefits to having a guy follow an opener who pitches one or two innings to lessen the times to the order penalty. And you could also use that, you know, supposed better reliever against the best part of your opponent's lineup. So it serves two purposes. One, to utilize one of your better relievers in a high leverage part of the game, or I should say a point when the opponent can do a little bit more damage since it's the top of the order. And two, to help your usual starting pitcher go deeper and not have so much of an effect when they have to go through the order a second and third time.
So, Paul, if you're the Yankees, would you consider using an opener for, let's say, Loaiza, Domingo Germán, CC Sabathia start, something like that?
You know what? I think what you're doing is asking the question of, does it make sense statistically and in practice? Probably, but does it change the way baseball has been played forever?
I want to ask pause you on that one because I have strong feelings about that as well. But I first want to just say, just from a pure maximizing wins, should the Yankees?
Yeah, it probably does. Whitey Herzog, the great manager back in the mid '80s, in the early '80s when he was managing the Cardinals, had said a number of times that the way baseball teams can win games is to have one pitcher pitch each inning and just have like a 9-man pitching staff and just have each guy go one inning every single day and you'll never lose a game. And I think that's the way the game is moving. And I do think it makes sense. But we'll save the tradition discussion for a couple minutes.
Yeah. Derek, do you think the Yankees should use an opener?
No, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's great for, you know, I want to see what guys like Loaiza and Herman can do. And it's not like the Yankees are scratching desperately for depth. I mean, if Loaiza or Herman doesn't work out, you still can try guys like Justus Sheffield, for instance, or your guy, I know you love Josh Rogers. you know, so I don't think it's necessary for the Yankees. I think it's more important. And maybe not so much more important, but it's more understandable for a team like the Rays, who's just not willing to pay up and have certain constraints to try things a little outside the box. For a team like the Yankees, I don't see how the benefit is going to push them, you know, to the next level because they're kind of already there. They don't need much additional pushing. Unlike the Rays, who need to squeeze out every last ounce they can.
So I think the Yankees should try an opener. I think also, and we'll talk about this, Major League Baseball should probably legislate away, but as long as it's on the books, the Yankees have, I think, kind of have the right bullpen for this, where they have, especially in a close game, or like a high-stakes game, like a playoff game, they have more relief pitchers than they probably would use in most cases. Someone like Chad Green can go to maybe even three innings, and you might not have a use for that, you know, late in the game. You might just, you know, get it right to Aroldis Chapman in some days. I think if you told Chad Green go out there and you get like 25 pitches, maybe that's two innings, you know, maybe that's one inning. You could essentially assure that really high, like that really powerful relief pitcher against the best lineup, the best part of the opposing team's lineup. I think where this really comes into play for me is CC Sabathia in starts with like a right-handed heavy top of the order. So, you know, if Sabathia goes out there and there's a bunch of lefties, you let him start the game. But if there's a bunch of righties, I think Sabathia, you know, could benefit from essentially missing those righties and letting Chad Green take care of them. Sabathia is all, you know, you don't want to waste innings by using an opener with a starter who might go really long. So, for example, you know, Luis Severino, you would never use an opener for because Luis Severino could pitch you 9 innings or 8 innings pretty reliably. But someone like Jonathan Loaisiga or CC Sabathia are basically good for 5 or 6 innings at this point. Loaisiga may be just 5 innings. And, you know, if that's the case, I think you're not really losing anything by going with an opener, and you do get to assure, you know, essentially that those, you know, that top of the order sees one of your best pitchers. I think if the Yankees get close to the playoffs, either like, you know, that last high stakes series against the Red Sox or actual playoff games, I think they should actually consider that. And by the way, Chase and Shreve has just entered the game, which is not good.
What's the score?
It's 6-0, so hopefully that's enough.
It'll be 6-6 in a minute.
Yeah. So that's our live update in the game. So that's just my I think that an opener is almost a no-brainer strategy in just in terms of the math. Like, it just makes sense to use your best relievers in your high-leverage situations, like facing the top of the lineup. But I want to talk about what Paul was kind of alluding to. Paul, is this good for the game?
You know what? I don't want to say it's bad for the game. I think what it does is it changes the game. I'm an advocate of the DH. I'm an advocate for things that aren't necessarily always traditional, though I don't like the wild card and all that. I liked when we had just straight divisions, but I understand the need for that, and I don't hate it. I just think what it does, one of the nice things about baseball is that it ties to tradition, and even though pitchers today don't go nearly as long as they used to, and the win is a flawed statistic, there is still some attachment to it, and the idea that this guy is a pitcher who can pitch deep into games and who does seem to win more than he loses, and he can win 200 games or 225 games or whatever, and you could say, how does that compare to Walter Johnson or Warren Spahn or Lefty Grove or whoever. And what this would do is it would really end the idea of a starting pitcher being a starting pitcher, a guy who pitches the bulk of the game when it's his turn. And instead it changes it to a situation where there's a series of pitchers and it's a pitching staff that will win you a game rather than a pitcher. And it's a different way to watch the game, and it's a different way, I guess, to enjoy the game. And you know, the traditional part of me just is a little bit sad because I've grown my whole life watching the idea that this guy's the starting pitcher and this is who you're putting all your eggs in the basket today for.
Derek, is the opener, if the opener becomes widespread, is that good or bad for baseball? Or neither?
I honestly, I don't have terribly strong feelings either way about it. I lean toward I'd rather not see it come into being a thing. I think about the roster construction standpoint of it, and I'm worried that we're going to see pitching staffs that are just like 14, 15 players deep. And that seems excessive to me. I don't want to see, you know, the game delve into having like 5 or 6 pitching changes per game on the regular. I prefer, you know, to keep it to, you know, ideally 2, 3, or 4 pitchers per game, and that including a starter who goes, you know, 5 or 6 innings at least. That's just my personal preference. But like, I wouldn't stop watching baseball because the whole league went to openers. I just, you know,
we're obsessive here.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of on Paul's side in this one. I think that there's a drama to a starting pitcher that, you know, a game is CC Sabathia versus whatever, Chris Sale. And that, to me, that adds something when you're watching it. And although, yeah, it's true that these days there may, you know, at best maybe Sabathia pitches 2/3 of the game, but it still is it still I don't know, it does feel like it adds something to the game. And I think I'm also kind of with Derek. I think that the logical endpoint is that every staff looks like the Rays right now, because the Rays are really killing it with this strategy. Like, it's the Rays have, I think, the 3rd best ERA in baseball, and the Rays lost 2/3 of their pitching staff before the end of April. So, you know, there's something to this. But it slows games down, you're right. It kind of makes games hard to follow because you have too many pitchers around. I think that the legislation here is some kind of rule where you limit the number of relief pitchers, which would, I think, do away with the strategy. I don't know exactly how you would do that. I think you might, you know, the part of the problem is that teams just might need more than four or five relief pitchers if, like, a starter exits early or something like that. But it's definitely something I think baseball should consider. Paul, would you consider some sort of a legislating cap on the number of relief pitchers, you know, with some kind of exceptions in there for injuries and that kind of stuff?
You know what? I don't think I would. I think the game naturally changes, and then I think it's up to the players and the management and the teams to adapt. I do think this is the way it's going, and I think it makes sense, and I think it here's the other part. I think it'll help preserve arms. People aren't going to be throwing 100 hard pitches each time out. They're going to be throwing 20 or 25 pitches. Maybe they then expand rosters if this is what happens, because I do I think the Yankees are carrying 14 pitchers right now, which is silly because we talk about strategy. There's only three guys on the bench. There's no strategy when there's three guys on the bench and one's a backup catcher. So maybe you go to 30-man rosters and then you still have a bench of people. But I just don't like when a new thing comes and then baseball immediately thinks that we have to legislate it out.
Yeah, the Yankees sent back down Clint Frazier after a pretty successful week, including a one game where he led off.
Including a game-winning homer that hit the speaker.
Yeah, that was fun. I forget out who in the broadcast said that I pity the person who has to go change the wires he loosened. But he was sent down for Giovanni Gallegos, who has not been very good in the major leagues, not been that great at AAA this year. Just because the Yankees felt like they needed another pitcher on the roster because some guys retired. So I'm kind of with you guys there. Anything else on the opener before we wrap up?
I got nothing else.
Okay. Then thank you guys for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm sorry for the technical issues from this podcast. Please go out and read my blog post on Aaron Judge. It is on BP Bronx. Please go read Paul's blog. Start spreading the news. Please review us on iTunes and tell your friends about the podcast and all of that. This has been your Bronx Beat Podcast.